I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Happy holidays, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Tuesday, December 10th, 2024. LA Galaxy won MLS Cup. The Rapids made some trades. We now know who the Pids are getting in the first round of the CONCA Champions. The Super Draft just got a lot more exciting, and the Great Dane might be taken in the expansion draft and then sent off to Qatar. There's so much news to get to, so let's talk about it. But first, let me introduce my friend and co-host. His whole deal is he's just a chill guy who low-key watches soccer, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have other things. I mean, I have a job and kids and a wife and a mortgage and all the other things. So I'm kind of like your average Joe, who also just is fanatical about soccer. So
Mark,
totally
did you not get that meme reference at all?
Nope, didn't. I have no idea what you're talking about.
The meme's already dead, so there's no point in even bringing it up. There's four listeners who are laughing. Oh, there's a cartoon of like a dog guy who wears like a sweater and has his hands in his pockets and their jeans, and he's like, the whole joke is that he's just a chill guy who does XYZ. So somebody will then Photoshop the Photoshop the Manchester United badge onto his shirt and put him at Old Trafford and be like, oh, he doesn't freak out about Manchester United being bad because he's just a chill guy who low-key enjoys watching the Red Devils.
Nice, got it. Okay. Yeah, I am on a semi-related note, I think Football Reference put out a list of the most Googled club by state today, and pretty much every state is Arsenal. And then there's a couple states where it wasn't most Googled; it was most looked up on Football Reference. And some of the states were wild, though. So Pennsylvania, it's Arsenal, like basically 25 states. West Virginia, Real Madrid. Kentucky.
I already know what Colorado is, and I know
Kentucky?
Who's responsible for it.
Oh, that's so funny! I can't believe you know that. Kentucky, Racing Louisville of the NWSL. So impressive. There are three NWSL teams that are the most searched team in their state, and then Colorado. It is
Crystal Palace.
That is so weird to me. Richard Terry is just clicking refresh on Football Reference over and over and over again. It's crazy. So,
yes.
Anyways,
speaking of all of that, Mark, we should acknowledge, of course, that the Holding the High London Derby took place this past weekend, and Fulham managed a 1-1 draw with Arsenal. Thank you to Martinelli for his, you know, one leg being offside on that front. So, Mark, we should come up with a prop bet for the second leg, given that it'll be back at the Emirates. And I would once again like to congratulate Fulham on being the reason that, well, there's a bunch of reasons Arsenal's not going to win the league, and it has nothing to do with how well Arsenal's playing or how bad Manchester City is, because apparently Liverpool's unstoppable. The only thing that can stop them is giant rainstorms in the northeast of England. But Mark, we'll briefly touch on this. Congratulations to the Los Angeles Galaxy on winning their sixth ever MLS Cup. They defeated New York Red Bulls by a score of 2-1. Mark, there are other people who watched that game more seriously than you or I who have broken down this game already. We will not do that to you, Rapids community. But Mark, I do have to ask you, do you feel any differently or any better about the Rapids season? Should this reframe our perspective on the Rapids losing to the LA Galaxy in the best of three by, you know, be getting swept by two games? Should that feel any better given the Rapids have once again lost out to a team that got to and won MLS Cup? The Rapids lost in 2021 to the team that hosted MLS Cup, Portland Timbers, and in 2016, when everything was going well, they lost to the Seattle Sounders, who went on to win MLS Cup in 2016. Mark, your thoughts?
I love it. I mean, I'd rather win the MLS Cup than have excuses for why we didn't win MLS Cup, because the team that won MLS Cup beat us in an earlier round. But I do really think what you said is true, and I've been saying it a couple of rounds ago. I mean, I think when we first for those listeners who were very much paying attention and remember back a couple shows ago, like I was definitely saying a while ago, like, oh, the Colorado Rapids are facing, I think I said it when we were at the end of the season, I was saying we need to finish fifth or fourth, because finishing sixth or seventh means we're going to play the Galaxy or the Sounders, mm-hmm. and we're not going to get by them. And we finished seventh, which was the worst of all options, right? Like there's a universe where the Rapids finish sixth, play the Sounders who finished third, and beat them, right? Forestalling the inevitable loss to the LA Galaxy in the next round anyways. But the point is, like I was saying, I think way back in October, we do not want to play the Galaxy. The Galaxy are on fire. I think the part of that was a little surprising was that the Galaxy were able to create a result despite the fact that they were missing their best player, which we haven't talked about because we took a little bit of break. Ricky Pooj, you know, tore his ACL, which is absolutely devastating for me. I'm, you know, me and Matt are kind of like atypical MLS fans in that the enemy of my favorite team is not a team that I wish ill upon every moment of the day. Like, I don't like the Sounders. I don't like the Galaxy. I really don't like Utah, but I don't wish ill upon them, especially if it makes the entire watching experience of Major League Soccer worse. So an MLS next year without Ricky Pooj is a bummer for me. And so I'm not a fan of that. But anyways, I think ultimately I was vindicated. I think we as Rapids fans are somewhat vindicated by the fact that the Galaxy won. I will also say, though, that New York Red Bulls bottled it again. You know, Metro Star Nation is just screaming into their pillows about the fact that they just cannot win this cup. I don't know if this is true, but it feels like they've gone past the Buffalo Bills in their Buffalo Billsitude. Although the Bills lost 5 years in a row, and that's almost impossible to defeat. For those of you younger listeners who have no idea what I'm talking about, in throwball back in the day, the Buffalo Bills with Jim Kelly at quarterback, when I was a kid, basically made it to the NFL Super Bowl and then bottled it every year. They could not get over. They couldn't beat the Giants. They couldn't beat the Cowboys. They couldn't beat anybody. Anyways, point is, I feel good about it. And maybe we build on this for next year.
I agree with you, Mark. I did feel bad for New York Red Bulls. I guess there was one, because I think, Mark, I looked this up. I might be getting the numbers wrong. It was between Lewis Morgan and Forsberg. It was one of them was a $3.3 million transfer, and the other was a $1.3 million transfer. And obviously, they spent a bunch of money on Dante Van Zier, who turned out to not work out. But this was typical Red Bulls in that they were one piece away and they didn't have it in the game in which they needed it. And Mark, let's be real. If Ricky Pooj is in this game, it's probably a blowout for LA Galaxy. But had Red Bulls won it, that would have been another feather in the cap, or that would have been a guiding light for the Rapids, that there's a signal that they're capable, that, you know, a budget team is capable of getting hot at the right time, getting the right opposition, being road warriors, and going on to actually win MLS Cup. This is just more confirmation, Mark, of what I think you and I have suspected for going on a decade now, which is that largely you need the best players that cost the most money in MLS in order to win MLS Cup. It's not a guarantee of that. Inter Miami, now in 2 years with Lionel Messi, has missed the playoffs and been out in the first round to an Atlanta United team that was empowered by Brad Guzan and the power of friendship. So take of that what you will. But, you know, if we just do what the Philadelphia Union do, we can be a perennial playoff team that in the perfect year wins Supporters Shield, in the perfect year wins, gets to MLS Cup, and then your center back scores potentially the game-winning goal, and then they sub on Gareth Bale, tie the game, and then win it in penalty kicks. And so this is just more confirmation of that, unfortunately. I thought it was a wonderful final, Mark, in terms of the atmosphere. The Diggity Carson, California is wonderful on an afternoon game in November, December, where it's not too hot. Only complaint about that, Mark, is just that time of day with that stadium. The lighting is just super weird. Mm. You know, and then you've got the south, the tower, whatever that they have, that creates a weird shading on that goal as well. So I would have liked kickoff to be delayed. a couple, but I mean, I thought it was a wonderful final. I thought it was the right team that ultimately ended up winning it, and pretty much every single other team that I think was better than LA Galaxy or had better odds fumbled the bag in the moment. So if the only thing that the Galaxy...
I want to just add really quickly, I visited Columbus Stadium last year, and they won MLS Cup. I visited Dignity Park, LA Galaxy this year, and they won MLS Cup.
Rabbi Mark Goodman, would you be interested in attending Dick's Sporting Goods Park in 2025?
I'm just saying, Porik sent me a plane ticket first class, and I can guarantee we'll win a trophy. I mean, like, that's just how it works.
Other teams, Mark, who would have seen who then went on to win a trophy are FC Cincinnati. So now we'll get into listeners.
I did visit Cincinnati 3 years ago, and they won nothing. So that's it's not foolproof.
Was that their spoon year, Mark? Though
no, it might have been their second consecutive. I don't think so. No, that was the year that they were pretty decent. It was because I remember being at a bar with the spoon. And I took a picture with it. So
they had already won the spoon.
They had won the spoon the previous year, yeah.
Okay.
And they didn't win it 2 years in a row, right?
I don't believe so. Not 2 years in a row of the year before you were there and then the year you were there.
Right. Yes.
In any case.
You know everything.
Listeners, earlier this week, MLS had a half-day trade window that allowed MLS teams to shuffle their deck and make some moves prior to the expansion draft, the super draft, etc. And the Colorado Rapids were very, very busy. We will start chronologically with their trade with FC Cincinnati to acquire center backs Chidozie Awuzie-M, goes by Chido as his nickname, and then Ian Murphy. And that was in exchange for $1 million in general allocation money. And then there's also some conditional performance-based metrics that could give Cincy an extra $200,000. So potentially $1.2 million in GAM. And then there's also a percentage transfer fee on for both of those players if they're traded either within the league or if they are traded abroad. Mark, let's go to both of those players. So we will start with Chido. Mark, I've spoken to multiple people at Cincinnati and then somebody also at the Rapids, and he said that's what he prefers to be called, and apparently it's a fun nickname. So I don't think he'll be opposed. We here at HTHL like to be fully accurate, and so Chidozie Awuzie-M, I will, of course, ask him how that pronunciation is, but if you just want to say Chido, so it's like Cheeto, like Flaming Hot Cheetos, listeners, but with a D instead of two Ts in that situation. So Chido Awuzie-M, Mark, will turn 28. Both of these players, Mark, have birthdays in January. Chido is a New Year's baby, and then Ian Murphy is born in mid-January, I think January 15th or January 16th. So Awuzie-M will turn 28 in January. He joined FC Cincinnati in the summer transfer window, and he played 14 games despite only being with the team for half a season, so he's about 500 minutes in MLS. The transfer fee, according to Transfer Market, which is not always that accurate, but it's the best we got, was believed to be around $500,000 in euros, and his contract was guaranteed through 2025, since he then picked up his option his guaranteed through 2025, and then he has team options for 26 and 27. And this past year, Mark, he was on a guaranteed compensation of $1.2 million. So the Colorado Rapids have a TAM, potentially DP-able center back. He is 6'4". He previously spent most of his career in Portugal. He would have been at Boa Vista, overlapping with one Reggie Cannon. I think it'd be a fun question if both of them were getting paid by Boa Vista at the time. And he's originally from Porto. He spent a bunch of time as a bench player and then also had a bunch of loans throughout Europe. He went to Turkey. He went to other Portuguese clubs. There's a Croatian club in there as well. And he's been capped 33 times for his native Nigeria going back to 2017. Ian Murphy will be 25. In January, he was the 14th overall pick in the 2022 MLS Super Draft. That was the draft, listeners, in which the Colorado Rapids acquired Philip Mayaka, if I'm not mistaken. And he was taken after several other center backs. That being said, he's probably the center back who's panned out the most of the ones that were taken in the first round. He's made 39 appearances, all comps, in 2024. And that did include a decent run in Leagues Cup and then also the MLS Cup playoffs. And overall, he has played something like 58 games, Mark. So he got minutes as a rookie when the team was bad. He was an occasional starter last season or two seasons ago now, 2023, when they won the Supporters Shield. And in a very banged up back line, he got regular minutes as well. That being said, he was mostly a substitute going down the stretch. So there's maybe a situation where Murphy was the stopgap solution, and then the team signed Cheeto to then be the starter and have Murphy be the guy to play off of the bench. But in any case, he signed a contract extension in August, and that was through 2026. So he's guaranteed for next year and the year after, and he has a team option for 2027. Worth noting, Mark, Ian Murphy has a guaranteed compensation of $137,000 a year, and that was very, very close to what Mike Edwards made previously. He comes out of Duke University. Mark, what do we make of these two center backs? What's your initial read on them? What do you think of them and the fact that the Rapids acquired two center backs as they lost Moise Mambito and maybe are saying goodbye to Lalas Abubakar and Michael Edwards?
And Andreas Maxsho. So that's what's really going on here, but I won't spoil that piece of news until you get to it. But I will talk about it a little bit. There's one other piece of information that's worthwhile here, because I've dubbed myself the Rapids spreadsheet nerd. Now that the Rapids have done a much better job over the last couple of years at MLS, done a much better job of disclosing the rules. 5 years ago, if you listened to this podcast, which is crazy that you could have been listening to this podcast 5 years ago, but it's true. We would give kind of vague approximate numbers about like how much room the Rapids had less, but we were like guesstimating within $3 million. We've gotten down to the point where I'm pretty sure I've got the number to within like 250,000. The things that are unknown are some like additional $50,000 payments here and there that either aren't disclosed or like performance incentives that aren't disclosed. So there's a bunch of like things where like a player, you know, like there's an escalator on the fee that might be paid, that'll be paid at the end of the year, and it's based on performance incentives. And then the teams don't disclose what those performance incentives are. There's another one that I only learned this last year. I'm really nerding for you, which is the league gives a GAM allocation to teams. It's a standard GAM allocation. And then there's additional undisclosed money for missing the playoffs, for winning the championship, and then for the Rapids, like next year, qualifying for CONCACAF Champions League. So the league doesn't disclose how much they're giving for that, but we know that there's extra money in there. Anyways, my point is this. The Colorado Rapids also made a deal last week, or maybe slightly before last week, to sell Miguel Navarro to Tolaris for $1 million. He had been on loan to them. Matt wants to say something in a second.
We'll talk about that a little bit later. I guess we can talk about it now.
Well, we don't have to, but I just want to point out that the $1 million that they got for Miguel from Tolaris for Navarro is money that they could immediately then spend on two players by buying them from Cincinnati.
Yes. So I have heard. I've heard it's over $1 million. I've heard it's eight figures plus in terms of the transfer fee. Wow. So listeners, we'll just say, guy that you don't even remember because they traded Andrew Gutman for him and then brought Sam Vines back. You very much, from a Rapids Mass standpoint, you absolutely should be rooting for Tolaris to win the league. They're currently in a battle for the cup right now, Mark, and I believe their final game is the week of Christmas. So I wouldn't expect this to be official until after that. I wouldn't expect the final decision to be official until maybe after they know whether or not they're going to win the championship and what that looks like prize money wise. But this would be, if you're talking about the macro of what the Rapids traded to Atlanta to get Andrew Gutman, then the trade with Chicago to send Gutman to Chicago, bring Miguel Navarro to Colorado, then to send Navarro to Tolaris, have him ball out for them, have him play regular minutes in the Copa America for, I think he's a Venezuelan international, and then get the money off of that, Mark. That is a fantastic, like the collective, those three trades, what did the Rapids give up? What did the Rapids get? Fantastic Rapids math that Rapids fans should absolutely be rooting for. But so to your point, Mark, you know, there's a, you know, the Rapids got a bunch of money for Moise Mambito, are now potentially getting a bunch of money for an outside back that never played for them, and then right, cashing in big to get two center backs who I'll talk to in a minute. But Rabbi, I will now let you finish your thought.
No, I mean, you actually are helping me with my spreadsheet, because I hadn't even worked into my spreadsheet the money that they got from Bobito, and I now need to figure out how much of that could have been converted to TAM, because MLS has a whole complicated system.
I think it's
95%, right?
There's a cap on it, Mark, that at least in 2023 was like just over. It was like 1.05 million in.
Oh my god!
But I have it on very good authority, Mark, that whatever that max, if there was still a max threshold on how much GAM the Rapids convert that to, that they absolutely did that. So feel free to update your spreadsheet. So in any case, Mark,
cool.
The Rapids potentially have a lot of money to spend. Some of that's league money, and some of that's maybe other money that's going towards a winger or a demon.
Right. And the other thing I was saying was, like, you know, it looks like we're going to be losing Andreas Maxo, and that means that they're going to need to have center backs. So it's very, you know, Lalas Abubakar, I think we had all kind of assumed was no longer going to be the man for the job as a starting center back. So I think Chido Awadiem is a logical fill-in for them. Some folks on Reddit, their immediate comments about Ian Murphy were, he's going to drive you nuts. And then some other folks pointed out that he's probably not going to occupy because he makes only $89,000. He will probably slot in at what's called the supplemental senior minimum. So that's actually great because that leaves the Rapids with a number of remaining roster spots. So I'm excited about the possibility here. A couple people from FCC were also kind of thinking, like, I'm not really sure what's going on here because we really liked him. My basic take on players that you like who get traded on or sold on for good money is you're trading up, right? You're taking, like, you know, if you have a great first baseman who hits 30 home runs and you sell him to the Yankees, then you're planning on winning everything, you're going to go and trade for a guy at first base who's going to hit 40 home runs. Like that's the way the math works. And I think Cincinnati is in that rarefied air where they think they're willing to be and likely to be at the top of the league. So I think they think they're going to go out. They're going to sell us a center back and get $1 million. And they think they're going to go out and spend $2 million on a center back and get somebody who's better. I will just say one last thing, which is one of the challenges of this whole, we're going to spend more money to improve that position, is where the Rapids ended up with Maxo, which is they wound up with spending DP level money on a player who ultimately turned out to be, effectively looking at the advanced metrics and some of just the eyeball test, a very league average center back. I mean, he's not a bad center back. He's not a great center back. He didn't win an award. He's not an MLS best 11. He's not second team best 11. He's not third team best 11. And that means that for a DP center back, there are probably a handful of those in the league, like maybe six. So maybe Chido becomes that guy. But even if he's an above average center back, he's a big improvement over Lalas Abubakar. And that's great because Lalas used to be an above average center back and he's not anymore.
Mark, you want the most random thing that's a friend that it's soccer, fellow soccer journalist friend Rachel Krieger just texted me?
Krieger, who's here in Pennsylvania.
The healthcare CEO shooter guy, his cousin is a striker, is a midfielder for FC Cincinnati too. How random is that? We're not talking about this. We're going to move on, listeners.
You should see the face that I'm making right now. I don't know if I've ever made that face. I was starting to strain my neck. It was hurting my face so much.
I might screenshot that, Mark. That might be our new profile picture.
This podcast is not touching murders of healthcare CEOs with a 4 bazillion foot pole.
Anyways, Mark, so let's look at the players a little bit more advanced. So I wrote an article for Burgundy Wave that you should all go read on this, but I got in pretty quickly with our friends over from Cincinnati Soccer Talk, Mark, who we really, really like, and their buddy Brad Gouch, Gow, G-O-U-G-H, not sure how to say his last name. He gave me some really, really good insight on both of them. I'll just give you the shorthand version of it. So specifically on Murphy, he said, quote, "My verdict on Murphy is that he has the potential to continue to grow into a really solid MLS center back, but doesn't have a ceiling of a player that will get interest from Europe or a national team look." So Mark, if I'm thinking of like a Steve Birnbaum comparison in terms of the really good guy in MLS, and that's his level, and he's probably content beating there, I don't mind that, especially for $137,000 a year. And then Chido, he says, quote, "My verdict on Chido is that he will never be a best 11 MLS defender." That's okay. Neither was Lalas Abubakar, Andreas Maxu. "And you shouldn't build a back line around him. However, he legitimately will have the talent to be a part of a best in MLS back line with the right pieces around him. So maybe some Danny Wilson kind of comparisons as well, Mark. He did say that both of the players are relatively fast by center back standards, but certainly not Moise Bombito fast, Mark. So I think certainly the Rapids back line is getting quicker with either of those players in the team, but is that necessarily papering over the very clear issues or calculated risks the Rapids were making with throwing numbers forward and then relying on recovery speed in transition? I'd give them like a B on both of that. If we look at some of their advanced analytics, Mark, from say the Goals Plus metric on American Soccer Analysis or the stats on FBref as well, both of them are very, very good in possession. They're good dribbling the ball. They're really good passers as well. Cheeto's attacking stats, Mark, by the way, are off the charts. So from an XG, an X assist, an X goal chain as well, what he does on set pieces, Cheeto is one of the better attacking center backs that you could find in MLS. Nice. Granted, listeners, all of this is with half a year's worth of data and half a year's worth of data on a pretty good FC Cincinnati team. Mark, put any of these players on San Jose Earthquakes, their underlying numbers are not going to be as good, right?
Right.
So that's what to take into account there. And then I will say both of them do have some defensive weaknesses. So intercepting recoveries, that kind of things. Both of them are average to slightly above average on that. Spoke to somebody else, Mark, at the club who said that Cheeto was very much a vibes guy. He's Mr. Personality, and he wants to be kind of like the energy of the locker room. Murphy is a very, very reserved professional young man. So, Mark, I hate to say it, that it's kind of weird. Maybe I'm making assumptions here, but Cheeto almost seems like the 28-year-old perfect halfway between Lalas Abubakar and Moise Bombito, and Ian Murphy seems personality and build-wise very similar to Mike Edwards from what I've seen from him. The difference is he's a version of Mike Edwards who in 3 years in MLS has played 58 games as opposed to Mike Edwards who spent 2 years with Rapids 2 and then got, what, three or four appearances this entire year, Mark? So if we're getting an upgraded, a more developed but same age equivalent of Michael Edwards, and if we're getting a player who's halfway between Lalas Abubakar and Moise Bombito, and we're getting both of those for $1.2 million, Mark, and one of them's on $137K, and your point, one of them's a TAM or DP center back as well, I think that's really, really good business, and I think that's two decent players that you're adding to the team. Mark, we'll touch on Andreas Maxu as well, because you mentioned that as well. So, Mark, I have heard that there's interest. I've not heard that Andreas specifically wants out, but that he would be open to a move, and I would have to assume, Mark, with it going to the Middle East, that that's mostly a financial reason because FFP salary caps no existe in oil country. I have not heard that it is specifically or exclusively to Saudi Arabia, so maybe one of the less problematic states there, Mark. And I've also heard that that the club would be open to the move, but if that makes sense financially for all parties. So obviously, right. Andreas, the other thing to also consider here, Mark, for a lot of these foreign players, their tax situation is particularly advantageous. So if you compare it to, Andreas Maxu, who's playing typical U.S. tax, and I guess we'll see if on January 21st, 2025, Mark, whether or not some of the tax bracket of that changes as well. But, you know, Maxu is used to playing in a Scandinavian country.
This is not an accountant's podcast. This is not. Do not take financial advice from either of us.
No financial advice and no crime scene or legal investigations into murders of Fortune 500 CEOs. So, but in any case, Mark,
we're barely qualified to talk about soccer, let alone talk about financial advice or homicide.
Mark, we're just two chill guys who low-key watch the Rapids. That's basically our entire personalities.
Anyway. And only one of us actually knows what that meme is about. So, phenomenal.
Okay,
phenomenal work, Matt.
In any case, Mark,
keep going.
Andreas Maxu, the Great Dane, comes from Scandinavia that has a very progressive tax system. Comes to the United States where also taxes are there. So even if the salary is slightly less, if he could make sense more for him and his family financially, maybe if he wanted to go somewhere warmer, Colorado has warmth in the summer, but obviously has some Scandinavian components to it in the winter as well. And again, I've heard that Colorado would be open to him leaving. This isn't a Cole Bassett situation. Like the Rapids aren't letting go of Cole Bassett or Georgi Mihailovic without top dollar right now, Mark, but they're not doing it without the move making sense. I would certainly not expect that the Rapids are, you know, carte blanche saying to Andreas, like, hey, if you find a team that's willing to make you an offer, we'll let you go on a free transfer. That's not a situation. But to your point, Rabbi, you know, Andreas is on relatively high wages. I think he's a decent center back. I think he's a good fit for the Rapids. Is he worth a DP roster slot? I think similar, Mark, I've said this multiple times about Lawless, where if Lawless and Bubakar was making $400K, no one would be complaining about him from a financial component standpoint. If Andreas Maxu was a max budget center back, Rabbi, I don't know if you have that on your spreadsheet. I think that's what, like seven, is it 800K for 2024? Max budget player?
$743,000 and 750.
Okay.
Right.
So let's call it 750K, Mark. So if Andreas Maxu...
And Maxo's a TAM player who we need to pay $598,000 to buy down.
Yeah. So if Andreas was making $750,000 in 2024, Mark, I think we would feel differently about that. I do want to comment on... I saw this a lot with Georgi Mihailovic. We've seen this with Rapids fans and other players as well, Mark. Listeners, you pay too much attention to... the lack of extroversion, you pay too much attention to body language on the field or guys not being enthusiastic vibe guys, and then assume that the lack of emotion is an indication that they're not happy here, that they want to leave the club, or that they don't like the fan base, they don't engage with the fan base. Some of these players are introverts. Some of these players are human beings who are a certain way on the field as well. Georgi Mihailovic has a way of expressing himself when things go well, when things go poorly, that is not necessarily an indication of buy me out of my contract, I want to go back to Montreal, or I want to go back to Europe. You guys are reading too much into this. Andreas's English, by Scandinavian standards, isn't particularly great. He's not a particularly expressive human being. He is a stoic, tall, dark, handsome Scandinavian man who knows that winter is coming and is very, very blunt about that. Do not read too much into that. Just because he is not Lawless Abubakar or Morris Bombito in his extroversion on the field after games does not mean he is demanding to be transferred on a free transfer to the Middle East so that his salary can go up 4%, but his taxes get cut down to a third. So I wanted to say that as well, Mark. I don't think Andreas Maxu, I'm not sure whether or not Andreas leaves. I think Andreas has interest, and if he's going somewhere, it's going to the Middle East. I have not heard that someone from the Middle East has specifically put in an offer as well. So, Mark, at this point, it's an explorative curiosity in the same way that Kolbasset turning down Benfica B in 2022 was an explorative, or excuse me, 2021 was an explorative curiosity. Or, you know, that one Spanish club, Mark, that was in for Jonathan Lewis for half a day on transfer deadline day like 4 years ago. Like, that's the kind of situation that we're in. We'll see whether or not he leaves. To your point, Mark, about the expansion draft and Maxu being left exposed, I think the Rapids are very much making calculated risks here, Mark. Julian Gressel has been left open by Inter Miami. There's a lot of teams that have 15-plus players that are exposed as well. I think the Rapids are understanding that there's 29 other teams in the MLS expansion draft. They can only protect 12 players plus their homegrowns and GA players under some certain conditions. If you want to take Lawless Abubakar to then pick up Lawless's team option for 2025, absolutely be my guest. There are better, more talented, better budget-friendly players that are available to San Diego FC than Lawless Abubakar and Andreas Maxo. Mark, anything else? I kind of said what I wanted to say about the two Cincy guys. Anything else you want to say about this trade? Or shall we move on to the most Rapids, most Philadelphia Union move of all time?
I think we covered this one in a great way. Let's keep going.
Listeners, so earlier today, Colorado Rapids confirmed, but it also got leaked on Monday, that Colorado Rapids have traded for 3 years' worth of Philadelphia Union draft picks. That is for $350K in general allocation money up front. And then there was also performance incentives that could total $250K. So potentially, the Rapids are paying $600K in GAM for 8 draft picks. The guaranteed money breakdown, listeners, is $125K in 2025 and 2026, and then $100,000 in 2027 general allocation money. Mark, I believe this is the first instance we have seen of the Rapids trading 3 years worth of GAM, not like this year's GAM and then maybe next year's GAM, like going out further than that. Maybe your spreadsheet has something different on that. So in any case, listeners, Colorado Rapids have gotten the first and third round pick for FC for Philadelphia Union in 2025. Matt, what happened to their second round pick? The Colorado Rapids already have it, listeners. The Rapids acquired Philly's second round pick for this year in the trade for Oliver Simlu. Do you remember that goalkeeper the Rapids took out of Marshall a couple of years ago, and then he didn't make the Rapids, and then he went down to the USL to play with Louisville for a year, and then he wanted to go to MLS, and Colorado traded his MLS rights to Philly. They got their second round pick in there. Then it's very simple, the first, second, and third round picks in both 2026 and 2027. So in any case, Mark, with that, the Rapids now have three first round picks. This includes their natural pick, which is number 16 overall, Philadelphia Union, who missed the playoffs. That's the eighth overall pick. And they also have LAFC's natural first round pick at 26. That trade was picked up by Vancouver Whitecaps at one point, and then Colorado got that in the trade with Vancouver for Ralph Priso. So, Mark, as Porrick Smith told me on the phone a couple weeks ago, a couple hours ago, the Mark Anthony K trade keeps paying off in spades, because the Rapids get Ralph Priso from Toronto FC for Mark Anthony K, flip Ralph Priso for a first round pick to Vancouver, and now they get that pick. So they've got three first round picks this year, Mark. They've got a top 10 pick from Philadelphia Union. Rabbi, you tell me if you disagree. I think Philly's headed for a rebuild with Jim Curtin out and a bunch of older players. They've traded all their back picks, so they're going all in on their homegrowns. Quinn Sullivan will probably play 1,000 minutes in 2025. Philly's probably not making the playoffs this year, Mark. That's probably another top 10 pick that the Rapids are getting. In any case, Mark, what do you see from this from a move standpoint? As someone who watched way more college soccer that wasn't DU's playoff run, what do you see in this move as the Rapids, you know, Horik Smith's favorite day of the year is the Super Draft, because he gets to brag about all these players that are going to turn into Dom Baji.
Yeah, I mean, it's an arbitrage move. It's a very interesting theory, and I think the guys the MLS guys who love the Super Draft, like Matt Doyle, will love a move like this. You know, it is also a who are the nachos moment for Philadelphia Union. And if you don't, I like that Matt picked that up immediately. I will name check this meme. It's the thing that I yell at the beginning of the show, the clip that Matt put in, which I hope we keep in there, but I probably have said something else funny this last year for next year.
It was a soundbite from the intro, I think 2 years ago now, Mark.
It was a long time ago. So anyways, we had a long conversation a couple of years ago about the year that the LA Galaxy traded all their picks while sitting at the table of the Super Draft, and then they had nothing to do, and there was this famous camera shot, very brief camera shot at the Super Draft of Bruce Arena and four other guys at the LA Galaxy table eating nachos because there was nothing else to do.
So they ordered nachos.
So they ordered nachos at the Super Draft. And my question was, who paid for the nachos? Does that come out of, does Bruce Arena, did he have a discretionary fund for the LA Galaxy? Was this expensed? Does the general manager, Chris Klein at the time, pick up the tab? Like, how does that work?
It's but anyways, Phil Anschutz, Mark. I'm pretty sure they were able to expense the nachos. But yeah, it's a good question. What is the... I will ask Porrick the next time I speak to him, Mark. What's what was the food situation at the Super Draft? And what was the payment structure?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're really smart and you're Bruce Arena, you pull like a... you're in the ballroom of the hotel and you say, can you charge this to room 421, that's the room of Garth Lagerway. Yeah, no problem. You know, like that would be a class move. Find out where all the other GMs are staying, what room number they're in, and then charge, you know, crack crab and champagne to their room. Anyways, the point is the meme that I'm trying to reference, or the joke that I'm trying to reference, is when you go YOLO on your draft picks, or the opposite of YOLO, which is you unload all your draft picks because you just don't think they're really worth anything. Super draft picks, I don't think there's any argument amongst most MLS heads, have been declining in importance and value for years. The draft has been shortened. College players, because of the relationship and the strength of MLS academies, more and more players are understanding, just like in the NBA, that if you're really, really good at the sport, you should bypass the NCAA and go straight to an MLS team or even a European team. So there's not as many good players in the NCAA, and it takes a lot to scout them. You know, they don't even have a combine anymore. They used to have an MLS combine down in Florida, and they got rid of that last year and the year before that. Matt thinks there is one.
I think they're bringing the combine back.
Oh, I think you're right. I did see that because my Pittsburgh website just texted out that two guys from Pitt are going to be, you know, in the combine. And I didn't even read it close enough to realize there was an actual combine. I thought it was like a short list. But anyways, the combine doesn't have a lot of value, though. It's actually been, interestingly enough, way more valuable for USL than it has been for MLS, because most of those guys are going to wind up in the USL short term or long term anyways. Point is this. This is mostly lottery tickets for the Colorado Rapids. These are players who might not pan out. And if you stack them, if you get enough of them, and you stash them with your academy team, or you loan them to a USL team, and they develop, then you're really lucky. And if you invite them to training camp at the beginning of the season in San Diego or wherever they're going to go this year, and they do great things, then maybe they occupy one of those last spots. The other thing that's interesting is, of course, the Rapids have a whole bunch of open spots on the supplemental roster. My math says they have 5 open spots, which they may fill with, or 4 if you count the guy from Colorado Rapids 2, who apparently has a deal to move over there,
Dauda Amadou, Mark.
Dauda Amadou. So anyways, they have a couple of spots. These are low-priced players. There's not a lot of risk, and there's a high upside on them, as the Moyes Bombitos of the world will show you. Kimani Stewart-Baines is another great example of that. You know, a young, talented college guy who maybe comes around next year. Maybe next year is his breakthrough. Matt already name-checked Philip Mayaka, a guy who they drafted, and he didn't really work out. A couple years ago, the Rapids drafted Robbie Mertz. Mertz didn't make it out of training camp. He came back to Pittsburgh. He wound up with the Riverhounds, and he's had a really successful USL career ever since then. So, you know, they're low risk, low reward. If you do the math, basically it's what I think 250, 350, and 350 is the way it all works out, or 250, 250, and 350, or something like that, to figure out how much they paid for these spots.
Do you want the we don't know the breakdown of the performance numbers, Mark, the 250, but so for the guaranteed money, it's 125K this year and next year, and then 100K the year after that.
Oh my God, it's even lower. I was overestimating by leaps and bounds how much they paid. You know, if you break this out, you know, and divide it, I mean, like, these picks are what, like $50,000 a piece? Roughly, maybe a little less, 40,000 a piece.
And if you look at it, Mark, market value for like one of the top, not like the first overall, but like 5 to 15. So like the range in which you could get a GA guy or a really good senior that drops. You'll remember, Mark, Christian Roldan fell in the draft and fell to Seattle Sounders, even though he was like supposed to be the second midfielder off the board in his draft class. In any case, Mark, like a top pick where you might get a top talent, but at the very least should be getting a guy who can contribute in year one, who will pan out to be an MLS level guy, that's about 100K. So the Rapids have already got one of those if we're talking about the number 8 overall pick. If I'm right on my hunch on Philadelphia going into a rebuild with the kids and all of their academy kids and the million Sullivan siblings that they have in their academy as well, that's probably top 10 next year. That next year, that's 200K right there, Mark, of the 350 they've already paid for. Give me one Dom Baji from the later rounds as well.
And it's so this funny.
They've already made money.
That was the name that I was going to drop too, which is like Dom Baji was a 4th round draft pick who basically was like, there's no way this guy's going to pan out. And he did. He really worked out. But the draft is littered with players who also didn't pan out for the Rapids. You know, for every Dom Baji, there's an Alan Wynn and a Franzi Perreault. If any of you remember Franzi Perreault, Perreault actually wound up in France and had a very successful career. He didn't sign with the Rapids. That was their problem. It wasn't that he wasn't good enough to make the Rapids. It was that he wasn't planning on playing for the Rapids, even though he got drafted by them. But the point is, you know, I would say, having been, and Matt, you've watched the draft just as close as I have pretty much the last couple of years, I think they hit on like every 5th to 8th player. They go like, you know, they go one out of every 8 or one out of every 5 or one out of every 8 players sticks with the roster and has an impact. And if that's what we're looking at spending, you know, $400,000 to effectively get, you know, maybe 1 or 2 really good players who are probably worth at least that. But the real money, of course, is that you potentially draft a Moyes Bombito, who you flip to OGC Nice for $7.7 million plus incentives. I think the interesting thing is that Porik Smith is willing to take that risk. And I also think that this is who the Colorado Rapids are at this phase of the game, which is a team that produces a few academy players every year, but whose scouting team and whose general manager are clever and are going to try and find, you know, their path through. We're not going to compete for the biggest names in the league. We're going to, like, kind of pick up scraps.
Yeah, but no, to your point, Mark, about the money, you know, you retched, you know, roughly, you know, between 350 and 600K, so use 450K. Is that not what we would say that Andre Shinyashiki was worth after his Rookie of the Year? Is that not what we would say that Moise Mbembita was worth well more than that as well? You know, Mark, Marlon Hairston and Dominic Baggi, is that not what they were worth as well? So get me, you know, give me one of those top 10, a generation of these kids, a senior, you know, D-mid who's ready to play on day one. Give me one locked in starter who's got potential national team or sell on to Europe ability. And then give me one other guy that's your first guy off the bench. You know, Jasper Laufelsen, Mark, former Pittsburgh Panther as well. So in these eight picks, if you hit on two of those guys that are still on, you know, that are in the game day roster in their second year in MLS, that's absolutely a win. And if you get one Moise Mbembita, then, you know, Mark, 4 years from now, you and I are going to be saying that, well, I suppose this guy could come in the 2027 draft. So, Mark, maybe we'll revisit this trade in 2030 after that Sanna Nyasi international pick slot expires from RSL. And we'll talk about how the Colorado Rapids and Porik Smith fleeced Philadelphia Union, you know, for holiday shopping in 2024. But just to round it out, Mark, we'll now talk about the Super Draft directly. So all that talk was just general, Mark. Mark, we're pretty solid. You know, two of these eight work out, and it's money well spent. Yeah, it's good Rapids math.
100%.
Okay. We'll now move on specifically to the Super Draft for this year, Mark. So forget all of the draft stuff that happened in the very specifically for 2025. The Super Draft taking place on Thursday, December 20th, listeners. The Colorado Rapids have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, have six picks, and they have three in the first round. The eighth overall, that's Philly. Number 16 is their natural first round pick, and then the 26th overall pick is the LAFC pick they got from Vancouver for Ralph Preso. The only pick they have in the second round is number 38th overall. That is Philly's pick. Colorado does not have their natural second round pick. That got flipped to Real Salt Lake for Jasper Laufelsen. Then in the third round, they've got number 68 and they've got number 75. Mark, it is way too early for me to be making predictions on who the Rapids are looking at here. That's work that I'm probably going to do in the next week or 10 days, unless you want me to talk about the random backup right back for DU, for example. So there's that. But, you know, I will say that, again, listeners, the Rapids still value the draft because juniors, seniors, and sophomores are all available naturally, and then freshmen are the ones who are available for Generation D. So that opens up a whole new pool of players that are available that, Mark, you could take a sophomore in the third round, and then maybe he becomes a viable piece by the time he's played two more seasons worth of college soccer. So there's so much going on from a timeline development standpoint. The Rapids can now pick and choose that previously you were only picking from college seniors, and the only underclassmen that you could select were ones that were available from a GA standpoint. So you already had to pick a guy who, for the purposes of entering your club, was already a finished product as a 22-year-old senior as well. It's also worth pointing out as well, Mark, that you get the MLS rights for these guys for the next 2 years as well. So this is somebody who you could go spend a full season with Rapids 2 on a Rapids 2 contract before making a decision on them at MLS. So this is potentially the Rapids take a sophomore who's a 20-year-old. They play two more years of college soccer. They play 2 years with Rapids 2, maybe get loaned to the championship before I acquired their rights four calendar years ago, and have to make a decision on whether or not I want to exercise my rights, you know, me owning their rights to MLS and offering them an MLS contract. So the timeline for development and where you can pick guys in those timeline is just so much different. And that leads to more availability, especially in the later rounds where the Colorado Rapids have a history of getting guys like Dominic freaking Baggi. Mark, you know what will really help the Colorado Rapids with clearing their mind and having a good understanding of who they should select in the draft and how they should go about that?
What's that, Matt?
Magic Mind. Magic Mind, listeners, is the world's first mental performance shot. Mark and I have been taking them for quite some time now before podcast sessions. It has really helped us be calm and focus. I get really, really bad brain fog, and Magic Mind really helps out to combat that. Hopefully we seem a little bit less scatterbrained, even on an episode like this that is kind of all over the place. We've both been taking it for a little while now, and you can really feel the benefits compound over time taking it on a daily basis. Magic Mind has a bunch of really good vitamins and superfoods that helps you with your mood. It helps you with your stress. It's like a little 2-ounce greens powder shot of goodness that helps you with deep focus or turning around your workday in the afternoon. As someone who's really caffeine sensitive, I don't have any issues with that like I would with coffee. They spent 10 years working on their formula and doing a whole bunch of research. Give Magic Mind a try today by visiting the link in the show notes. Try their 7-day challenge by taking it every single day for a week and really feel the results stack up over time. Use our unique discount code HIGHLINER20, all caps, at checkout for 20% off your first-time order or 48% off a first-time subscription order. Thank you to Magic Mind for sponsoring this episode and keeping us on topic. Mark, how have you been enjoying taking Magic Mind over the past couple of days?
Basically, it's a good pick-me-up with my coffee. That's kind of how I do it. That's, you know, if you're testing the question of, like, how does it affect me differently than the coffee, I just feel less fuzzy, more focused. I have kind of like a more even reaction when I take it to just drinking coffee by itself. It's also like a kind of like an aperitif. It has a different flavor than the coffee, and so it's a nice kind of thing to set off with it. It's good with a muffin, too. It's a great way to start the day.
Mark, with that, let's look. I do have some news. I spoke to a few people at the club, Mark. So on the note of Rapids draft picks from yesteryear, Rabbi, we should point out that I have it on pretty decent authority that the outside back from the University of Central Florida, Anderson Rosa, who went back to finish his degree, he captained the team and apparently had really, really good leadership qualities in the combine and in some of the interviews, Mark. My understanding is he will be joining the club for preseason, joining the first team. And then Gunnar Studenhoff, who is the forward, he was previously at Manhattan College. He transferred this past year and played college soccer at USF. So one guy from the University of Central Florida, Mark, one guy from the University of South Florida. He would have just finished up his sophomore year, junior, I believe, and he is expected to join Rapids 2 in preseason. Mark, what do we think about this for the purpose of the Rapids getting a little bit of extra help on the depth chart as it relates to left back and Rapids 2 getting a striker? It's not like Eric Boucher doesn't have a good track record with guys like Darren Yapi at that position.
It's great. It's great. The more bodies, the better. I think that the level of flexibility, you know, the great thing about Rapids 2 and the rules that Rapids 2 and the league has created with MLS Next is that kind of ability to loan players for up to 5 games. You get Yosuke Hanya level production a couple times a year if you want it. And if those guys really, really catch and there's room on the roster, you can make a deal for them. That hasn't happened the last couple of years where the Rapids have had a 2-player who they've moved up, but it's all possibly there. In fact, one of the names of players who was made available in the expansion draft was Remy Cabral, who was a Rapids 2-player and then a loanee. So it's cushion, but there's always the possibility that guys like that will come good. I think the other thing is developmentally, it's good to have a deep pipeline, a long pipeline of players and a lot of options. The ability to have, you know, players who, if they don't pan out, they still have opportunities in Colorado to showcase their abilities and then wind up, you know, going somewhere else in USL is really, really good. So, you know, this year, USL2 is getting bigger. USL Championship is also probably maintaining its size. So there's a lot of really good things. American soccer is in general just kind of growing, both the men's and the women's game. Rapids being part of that overall national development is really important.
And I think also, Mark, them actively interacting with that pipeline where I think the Rapids got a little bit insular going into the relationship with Switchbacks and then maybe have been really academy or at times academy focused, given so many academy kids who they put up to Rapids too and then focus on the homegrowns. It's nice to see them interacting with that still from a draft perspective. And speaking of which, Mark, I will say Colorado Springs Switchbacks attacker and now USL Championship champion Yosuke Hanya has been sent back to Switchbacks for 2025. Super excited for him. He had a lot of fun at that season, Mark, and that was certainly a crowning achievement for him. I love Yosuke. I know Brendan Plone, listening to this podcast, absolutely wants to see Yosuke make it in with the first team. I think Yosuke's on his level. I think he's a USL championship level attacker and on a really good team that I think has a decent shot to go back and repeat as champions. And so I couldn't be happier for him, as much as there's a part of me, Mark, that would want to see Yosuke make it as a supplemental roster spot on the Rapids team and play like 500 minutes and have one game where he balls out and gets a goal contribution. But Mark, another thing that we have to talk about from a pipeline perspective, the University of Denver Pioneers and Sam Bassett will be going to the college soccer Final Four. Sam Bassett is an absolutely balling out as the captain, as the senior on the team, Mark. He is a number eight. He is doing very much Cole Bassett things. He runs like an engine. He is a box mux eight, and he is doing stuff in the final third to help the team create goals. They absolutely smashed UMass on Saturday, Mark, in an early kickoff that was just before MLS Cup. They won that game 3-0, and that sent them to the Final Four. So listeners, they will play their semifinal will be on Thursday, December 13th. That'll be at 3 p.m. Mountain Time. These games are on ESPN Plus, and they'll be playing Vermont. And then if they win that game, they will head on to the final, and that'll be on Monday, December 16th. That'll be at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. The other semifinal is Ohio State versus Marshall. Mark, you attended the game that Vermont played to get into this match, seeing them beat the Pittsburgh Panthers. What do you see in Vermont, and what do we make of the fact that a Colorado Rapids Academy kid, a younger brother of Cole Bassett, is balling out as the best midfielder on the number three team in the country that could win the national championship, and Sam Bassett could then follow that up with winning a Hermann Trophy, and hopefully, I've heard they're in talks, Mark, sign a homegrown deal with the Colorado Rapids to play with his brother.
God, that'd be a great story, wouldn't it? I will say, and I think it's nice to have a voice on the Colorado Rapids podcast who could be an expert in something sort of totally random, which is like a deep cut piece of information. But I'm sure people who are like hardcore NCAA soccer nerds kind of know this, but you'd have to go to another podcast to find that. And I don't even know who is knowledgeable and watching that much soccer. But I was at the Pitt Vermont game. There was no doubt that Vermont were the underdogs in this match. Their win, there is no doubt by both their reaction and by just kind of their overall setup as a team that this is Cinderella at the ball. I mean, I don't think anybody expected Vermont to go as far in this tournament as they had. They're not out of a particularly dominant soccer conference. I think they're in the America East Conference or something like that. Which I vaguely couldn't even remember. The way they won this game was really surprising. Pitt are a fairly talented team, although over the last couple of years they've lost some of their really awesome players, and you know them because a bunch of them came through Colorado, including Jasper Lofelson. The game, it was very cold. It was about 30 degrees. It was sunny, though, but there was still kind of a crunch to the ground, and the players were kind of moving stiffly. It was very difficult for either team to kind of string together passes that were really effective, but Pitt had the better of the possession in the first half. They couldn't find a way through. They didn't seem to be taking their shots. They would kind of get into the final third and then spill it. Or wouldn't make contact. And then at the beginning of the second half, there was a really little, ridiculous, innocuous little play. Pitt had a throw in. They threw it in their own territory to the left back. The left back took a touch, and it was long and lost control. And the right wing for Vermont, whose name I forget, picked it off. The goalkeeper was out of position because he was shading to the side to be ready to for something, I'm not sure. And this guy just took two touches and dribbled it into the goal for a 1-0 lead on 55 minutes. And basically, that's how it stayed. They bunkered at that point. They parked the bus from 55 till 90. And they absorbed the pressure with a 5-4-1 defense. And they really ate it and hung on to it and won that game. So I don't think Vermont is going to play this one nose to nose with Pitt, with Denver. I think they'll probably play very bunkered. They will, even if they don't play bunkered, they'll concede possession and they won't sally forth with too many men. they'll be worried about DU. And I think DU has definitely the upper hand in this one. The other thing is, I'm going to say something pretty dumb and like, this is very like ESPN basic PTI, or when you hear a commentator talk about Colorado Rapids on an MLS broadcast, and they inevitably bring up altitude, and they talk about altitude for 3 minutes, and you roll your eyes as a Rapids fan. You're like, I have heard people talk about altitude for every game for my whole life as a Colorado Rapids fan. The big difference in this game was Vermont looked like they played in the cold better than Pittsburgh, which seems kind of obvious because it's cold in Vermont. In North Carolina, that advantage doesn't exist. And I think DU is kind of an altitude all-weather team. You know, I've been out, you've been out, Matt. I was a high school teacher in Colorado, going out to root for our soccer team's games. And there'd be 3 inches of snow on the field, and the girls would play, and nobody would bat an eye, because that's life in Denver, Colorado. Denver kids are built different. They're really tough. And Vermont kids are really similar. I'm not saying Pittsburgh kids are soft, but that roster that Pitt put up was like 70% international players, and a bunch of them were from places like Brazil, Argentina, places where it does Spain. It doesn't get cold and it doesn't snow on the soccer field. So those kids have learned to play tough. But anyways, point is, Denver's got the upper hand in this one. I don't think there's anybody on the Vermont team that I kind of like overwhelmingly saw that was really effective. I forget the kid's name, number two, their right back, picked the pocket of the Pitt left wing over and over again, and was really a phenomenal player. So that's the one guy that I'll mention. But I wasn't getting like the greatest of like tactical, you know, doing the write up type stuff, because I was shooting photography. Which is really fun. And if you're bored, go on Blue Sky and check out my picks from the game. Anyways, I talked too long. Sorry about that, Matt.
Sam Bassett was playing AYSO soccer in Evergreen in the spring in the mountains, Mark. I think he'll be just fine in Cary, North Carolina in mid-December. Yep. I know, Mark, you had mentioned the question about other outlets that are covering the draft a little bit more. For the absolute sickos who think we have somehow not done a deep enough dive for you, I'd recommend Top Drawer Soccer. They usually do a mock draft or do player profiles as well. That'll be super useful for you to kind of pick out positions or just read about stuff to get you familiar with the draft. We will find out ahead of time the Generation Adidas player contract details. We probably won't get that info before the combine.
Your other two outlets that I like, Joe Lowry writes for Backheeled. He might do something. He does a great job of everything. I wish him well. And, you know, Matt Doyle does the write-up for MLS soccer. So that's a good one, too. And basically, as far as I know, Matt and Joe and the guys over at Top Drawer Soccer, they like talk to each other about who they think. So they're just, you're getting three spins of the same thing. But every once in a while, you'll see a surprise pulled there. I mean, Mark Smith will take a guy who everybody else had down at like 15, and he'll put him at 3 or 4 or 5. So that's always a fun thing.
Okay, Mark, let's get into the MLS expansion draft. We will not spend a whole lot of time on this because, listeners, there's a decent chance you will have, this will have already happened by the time you listen to it. But in any case, Mark, short answer, we talked about this a little bit earlier. I don't expect the Rapids to lose a player in the expansion draft. There are a bunch of ways that a player could become protected. Listeners, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole here. Here's the list of players who the Rapids have made available who San Diego FC could pick one and only one of these players. Goalkeeper, Ethan Vandrey. The Rapids have already moved on from him. Defenders, Lal Subhabhkar, Daniel Chacon, Nate Jones, Andreas Maxu. Mark, they've already picked up the options on Chacon and Nate Jones. We've talked about the potential future with Andreas Maxu. And Mark, I mean, let's go ahead. I'll ask this to you now, Rabbi. I do not think at this point Mike Edwards or Lal Subhabhkar return to the Rapids given the trade for the two Cincy guys. Agree or disagree?
I'm not so sure about Mike Edwards, but I think you're right about Lal Subhabhkar for sure. The name that was also on here that I wasn't surprised about, Jonathan Lewis. I don't think anybody's picking him. I was a little surprised to see Omer Fernandez. I don't think they've moved on from him, but I think they're willing to let him go. But I think the other thing that's really interesting about this list is that, and to your point about the, you know, like, I don't think San Diego's going to take if they're going to take five guys, I don't think they're going to take any of these guys. I mean, I remember when Charlotte did their draft, and they took like five guys who I'd never heard of, and then they traded three of them back, and then they flipped two on to a different team altogether. I don't think they ended up with any of the players they picked in the expansion draft, and I think the expansion draft before that was maybe it was Nashville. I think they basically did the same thing. It's the expansion draft. People have made an argument for getting rid of the expansion draft altogether and just say, give these teams $1 million extra in GAM or $500,000 extra in GAM and let them have fun with it. I think that makes perfect sense. I think the expansion draft, as well as the re-entry drafts, no longer makes sense at all, and the leagues should probably get rid of them. I believe the expansion draft they could get rid of next time immediately if they wanted to. I believe the re-entry drafts are subject to negotiation with the players' union. I wonder if the expansion draft is the same. The only upside of the expansion draft is I actually think Lalas Abubakar would be a nice piece for any team to start with. He's a veteran in the locker room. He knows the league really well. He can give you 500 or 800 good minutes as a center back. And I think he would be great for San Diego. I don't think they're going to take him. But that's the kind of guy who goes in these drafts. The kind of guy who does not go in these drafts is a Remy Cabral. Not because Remy's not good, but because teams can take a flyer on all kinds of young players from all kinds of places. Rejects from the Barcelona Academy. Guys who washed out with their MLS2 teams. So I don't know why you take any of these guys. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, Mark. So let's finish the list of guys who are available to the Super Draft.
I didn't realize you didn't read the list.
Yeah. Midfielder Omer Fernandez and Jasper Lofelson. Omer had one goal and four assists. The Colorado Rapids chose to use one of their 12 protected spots on Calvin Harris and not Omer. Calvin's on a cheap deal and was a generous Adidas players. Omer Fernandez just signed his free agent deal with the Rapids and is making like 400, 500K. Jasper Lofelson, fine, Mark. If you want Jasper, you can have Jasper. Then the two forwards.
He didn't get a lot of minutes this year, so I think he's just not. I think he's fairly expendable, no matter what. If they wound up flipping him for $150,000 to Seattle or something like that, I would be like, okay. I mean, I like Jasper, but I'm biased because I watched him at Pitt, so that's the only reason I like him.
Yeah, if you flip Jasper Lofelson, then that leaves more minutes for a D-mid who you sign as a U22 contract or a Sam Bassett who you sign to a homegrown. Neither of us is complaining. And then the two forwards, Remy Cabral, who the Rapids already declined their option on, and Jonathan Lewis, who's a free agent. I believe the only thing that San Diego would get by selecting Jonathan Lewis in this situation would be getting the MLS equivalent of his bird rights. So San Diego could offer him right now what Colorado could offer him, which is a higher percentage raise from what his last salary was as well. So, Mark, we've got a goalkeeper the Rapids have moved on from. You've got two bench center backs that if you really want him, you can have him. You've got a DP center back who, if you want him as a designated player in 2024, in 2025, you can have him. Or a player that potentially the Rapids don't need anymore because they just got two center backs. And then two forwards whose contracts don't necessarily make sense. And then a forward the Rapids have already declined an option on. And a forward who's a free agent who the Rapids, I think, would be okay with parting ways on. I do think generally Mark Jonathan Lewis probably needs a change of scenery, whether that's San Diego, whether that's going home to South Florida, whether that's going to Chicago Fire, who he spent some time with Andrew Gutman. I'm not entirely sure. In any case, Mark, the Rapids have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, have nine guys available in the expansion draft. There are MLS teams that have 14, 15 players available in the expansion draft. There are MLS teams that did not build their roster around Generation Adidas and homegrown guys and contracts that are at good budget numbers. Like Miami is so stacked with depth, Mark, they had to leave Julian Gressel available on the expansion draft. Mark, right now, I would pay $1.5 million in GAM for Julian Gressel right now with a 50% sell-on clause with Inter Miami. So I just think really simply, and again, we won't spend any more time on this than we have to. I just think the expansion draft has never been bigger and deeper in terms of number of contracts. There are way better contracts or contracts with more upside for San Diego to select. There are better players on better teams that had less depth that you could take that are starters right now, not guys that are growing into being a better role on right now. You're not taking Nate Jones in the expansion draft because he's not ready right now. You're only getting five of these guys, five guys that you get to steal off of other MLS teams out from under their noses for $0.00. You want to cash in as much as you can on every single one of those. In that, that has to be a guy who has immediate resale value on the MLS open market, or a guy who is ready to be a starter for you on day one. And with the exception of maybe Omar Fernandez and Andreas Maxu, whose contract doesn't make any sense, I don't think you're going to look at this. Once again, I don't think the Rapids are losing a player in the expansion draft.
Yeah, I mean, Chase Gasper is available for Chicago Fire. He's a fun guy. I mean, like, I'd take him. You know, he's a great option. You can get a good goalkeeper here. That's another really great. You've got your, if you want to pick your backup goalkeeper now and not have to think about it, San Diego, that's the way you go here. I didn't realize Sebastian Legette is available too. That's kind of crazy.
And Paul Areola too from FC Dallas. Mark.
Wow, that's a pretty deep. That's some interesting players. That you could really make some. Maya Yoshida is also available for the LA Galaxy. But yeah, your Julian Gressel shout is probably the best shout out of here. Oh yeah, and by the way. Former Colorado Rapid Anthony Markanek is also available for selection. So there's a lot of really interesting guys. You're not going to pick one of the Rapids. Bobby Wood's available. I forgot Bobby Wood existed.
You've also got Mark Hector Herrera is available for Houston. So if they wanted to do a little connection between Chucky Lozano and Ache Ache, that's something that's available to them.
No, I think he's going back to Mexico to play for some team at the bottom of the league. I don't think you're ever seeing. I think we're done with him, but that's just me.
Mark, I think we're done with the 2024 MLS expansion draft. Listeners, let's talk about the CONCACAF Champions Cup draw. Mark, I was really, really excited for this. I was hoping the Rapids were going to get a Mexican team. I was hoping to go to this game because I thought it was going to be super interesting. And what do the Rapids get stuck with? The one MLS team you didn't want in the first round, their absolute bogey team. It is LAFC, Mark. LAFC. It is the A1 versus B1 seeding.
We can't beat them. We never beat them. The only time we ever beat them, I wrote an article saying we weren't going to beat them, and then we beat them. So, like, maybe I never need to write another article.
Yeah. Okay, Mark. So let me give you some Rapids hope core here, Mark. So let's start out with the fact that this isn't a one-game knockout game, right? It's a two-leg series. The Rapids are the lower-seeded team, so they're getting the first game at home. That means also the first game earlier on in the season, Mark. That means earlier on in winter, right? So LAFC's had some tough games on the road at altitude, both at Colorado and at RSL. Mark, you'll remember this game last year. The Colorado Rapids came from behind and won that game 3-2. You had that free kick from Georgi Mihailovic. The Rapids had that famous win, Mark, giving LAFC their first loss of the year, I believe in 2018. That was the Mamma Mia, Danny Wilson scores the goal in a 1-0 game, in a lightning delayed game in the middle of the summer as well. And Mark, in early on, like the second or first week of the season last year, LAFC played at RSL. It was a snow game, and RSL spanked them 3-0. So, Mark, let's acknowledge, yes, BMO Stadium is a horrible place for the Colorado Rapids to go. They have played 7 games there, all time, all competitions. They have lost all 7 games. Mark, do you want to guess what the aggregate scoreline is in those 7 matches?
Oh, my God. It's a lot. It's a lot to a little, right? 23-6.
Close, Mark. It is 21-2.
Oh my God, we only scored 2 goals. That's not good.
2 goals in 7 games, and LAFC has never won. LAFC has won by multiple goals in all 7 of those games, Mark. So it's not like one of those games was like 2-1 or 3-2. So in any case, Mark, yes, BMO Stadium, the Bank of California Stadium, is a horrible place, and every single time the Rapids have gone there in league play, on decision day, in Leagues Cup, you'll remember, Mark, it was the semifinal game of Leagues Cup that the Rapids lost 4-0 in this game to then get into the third place game, to then beat Philadelphia Union, to then get in CONCACAF Champions, only to then draw Los Angeles Football Club. So all of that, yes, all the House of Horrors and everything in the second leg, Mark, but let's acknowledge that LAFC has often come to Commerce City, had a lethargic performance, and the Rapids have been able to get results. And LAFC, in the macro, has not had good experiences playing at altitude or playing in weather. Rabbi, if like listeners, if you are like the most diehard Rapids fans right now, you should be praying to Chris Bianchi that this first leg in Commerce City against LAFC to open the 2025 season is Snow Classico 5. give me Snow Classico 5 mark, or at the very least, freezing temperatures at kickoff in this game. And the Colorado Rapids, for me, are the favorites to get a result. Or at the very least, it's more likely the Rapids win the game than they lose the game. And if they're able to do that, Mark, they've got a chance on aggregate going on the road to, at the very least, like, go flat 4-4-2 and somehow hope that Zach Steffen does what he did against Club America, 16 saves, and then the Rapids are able to get out of there at Dodge. So that's a possibility. That being said, Mark, if you told me right now, Matt, the Rapids are going to lose this game 4-2, 5-2 on aggregate, and that's going to be with a 2-1 win in a snow game where all of the advantages are put up to them, I'm like, yeah, that probably makes sense. Scheduling-wise, listeners, we don't know that schedule. There was a possibility that CONCACAF was going to release that tonight. They have not. We know that both of these games are going to take place in the month of February. I would be willing to bet, listeners, that these games, the home leg is the week before MLS starts on the Wednesday, and then the away leg is Wednesday at LAFC before the Saturday in which the Rapids open up the season. So those two Wednesdays before the first weekend of MLS, the opening weekend of the MLS season, is probably when the Rapids are playing, but TBD on that. We'll have plenty of time. And Mark, the travel, at least from this standpoint, is going to be as complicated as trying to get, you know, to one of the Mexican markets. You know, this is going to be a Tuesday or a Wednesday flight on Southwest to Burbank or LAX, which I assume we're going to have options for. Mark, really quickly, I do not think that the Rapids will advance out of the first round to play Columbus Crew in the round of 16. Do you agree LAFC wins this tie regardless?
Probably. We'll preview that game when it's time to preview that game. I'm just excited. I'm just happy to be here. I mean, like, that's it's really, it is nice that the Colorado Rapids finished third. I had the nice thing about the CONCACAF tournament is I had to do a refresher just now to figure out, like, who are the other teams in this tournament? What's the format this year? And then I looked at some of the teams and I was like, wait, why are they there? Like, I was looking at the bracket and I was like, wait, Sporting Kansas City, they're in it? Why? And I was like, oh, they won Open Cup. That's crazy, which is super weird this year because, remember, a whole bunch of MLS teams didn't play in Open Cup at all. They sent their academy teams instead. So it's a little bit of a weird year. There's a bunch of teams also in the bracket because Canada is sending, I think, three teams, two from the Canadian Premier League and one who won the Canadian version of Open Cup, which is called Canada Open Cup. I don't remember.
Vancouver won the Amway Canadian Championship, Mark.
Look at you!
And it was Cavalry who I think won the Canadian Premiership.
Nice, but there's a third team there too, I think. So
and then in
MLS, the Supporter Shield team goes, but they don't get that bye to the round of 16. They have to play in the first round. And then they picked, I think, the second, third, and fourth team in the overall Supporters Shield race as other MLS teams. So it's kind of a mixed bag of like, Highliners, you should not think too much about why these teams are there. Don't waste any time like I did going to Wikipedia and being like, why is that guy there? Just look at the list and be like, yeah, okay. And also be like me and Matt, which is bummed that we're not playing some cool team from Central America or a team from Mexico.
Saprissa would have been so much fun. I would have loved to go to that stadium, go into the press area and have...
Oh my God, you would have gone to Saprissa?
Yes, I would have gone to Saprissa. And died happy.
Yeah, I mean, you and I, we both covered, what year was it? 2017, when the Rapids played Toronto, and you and I covered the world's coldest game when the beer taps froze. But that's it. That's me and you's life with CONCACAF, like we've never seen. You know, you have to be a real old school MLS Rapids fan to remember the last time, which was they played some team from Central America. No.
Comunicaciones.
Oh, yes, of course. In between that. But I'm talking before that.
From winning MLS Cup in 2010, Mark.
Yeah, like in 2011, they played...
I'm not going to remember.
I remember. I don't know why I remember this off the top of my head. Usually, you don't remember these things. I don't remember these things, and you do. Isidril Metapan? Something like that.
Isidor Metapan, the Salvadorian club.
That's the one. Yeah, they played them in like 2011. So, or maybe they played them in 2008. But anyways, the idea that you and I would meet up in Costa Rica, that would be really cool. Alajuelense, who I think are Costa Rican, they got a bye. They got the round of 16 bye, so that was kind of fun to note. Anyways, I'm just rambling at this point.
The Colorado Rapids, Mark, were in the 2011 group stage. They were in Group B, and they were in there with Santos Laguna from Liga MX, Isidore Metapan of El Salvador, and fellow Salvadorian club Real España. And the Colorado Rapids finished third.
Yep.
And we're out in the group. They got grouped. At least, Mark, if nothing else, there is no group stage in the CONCACAF champions, in the CONCACAF champions, for the Rapids to get grouped. It's just unfortunate for the second time Colorado's actually in it after a really good regular season, and we draw an MLS team that on paper has more money than the Rapids.
So boring.
Mark, let's move on. We've got some Ask HDHL, so we'll do some quick hitters, one of us answering each of these. So, Mark, I should point out, all of these came from Blue Sky. So, listeners, for those of you who don't want to see us on the other site, you're welcome to join us and follow us on Blue Sky. We're at Rapids96podcast on all of our platforms. So this one first comes from Jason Maxwell, Mark, who asks, do you think Yapi is Navajo's backup again, or do we sign somebody in that role? Mark, do we take a run at a veteran striker and then allow Yapi to go on loan to like the championship, or are you happy with Yapi backing up Rafa?
So I did a big deep dive article for Holding the Highline a couple weeks ago on the advanced metrics, and the advanced metrics favor Darren Yapi this last year. They basically said that he scored at the rate that he was expected to, that he roughly averaged an expected goals just over two, and he scored two goals. So it implies that you got to feed him in order for him to get what he needs. And also the minutes that he's been getting haven't been quality enough, and they haven't been enough to give him goals. So do I think that translates to the Rapids leaving him as the striker? I think that a good option for Colorado this coming year would be to use one of these gazillion super draft picks to go out and get another young striker. The challenge, just giving Yapi somebody who's pushing him would be a great thing. I also don't think, having looked at my academy spreadsheets, that the Colorado Rapids have any young strikers in the pipeline. So I think that that's kind of like where they're at, which is like the alternative of going out and spending money on like kind of an over-the-hill veteran striker, like the modern version of a Kai Kamara or the modern version of a Chris Wondolowski, doesn't really strike me as likely. But it you know, you never know. I mean, I don't know who's going to be available, and I don't really know what Porik's priorities are with goal scoring. I think in general, like, it's better to have like a specialist than it is to have a backup. And by that I mean, you know, Alan Gordon a couple years ago for the Rapids, a guy who came in and just scored goals with his head in the 80th minute. You want a guy like that, like a someone who changes things up more so than you want a guy who is just a good striker who could be a backup. So that's my thought. Will the Rapids spend money for it? I don't think so. I think they'll wait for something, you know, to kind of fall in their lap if it becomes available.
None of the young attackers, Mark, either from Rapids 2 or the academy, or guys who have been who would have been out on college, have really rung a bell for me, or at least I haven't heard anything about the Rapids doing that. So I don't think there's nobody within the Rapids system or within the club that I think comes in and certainly unseeds Darren Yapi on that front. So I would kind of agree with you that I think they like Rappy being around the first team and getting regular training minutes. And if he gradually gets more playing time, even if that's at timeout wide, or we've seen Chris be willing to play the two strikers up top as well, I think that's better for him than taking a step down quality wise in training and on match day to play 2000 minutes in the USL championship. On that note as well, Mark, I have heard rumblings the club is leaning towards, for that third goalkeeper spot, going for an older player with MLS experience, and then freeing up Adam Beaudry to maybe get some minutes with R2, go out on loan with the USL Championship. I would not expect that to be another young guy like Ethan Bandry, even though we've heard really good things about Campagnola. I don't know that he's necessarily ready for a homegrown contract. A Rapids 2 contract where he then plays 2,000 minutes for Eric Boucher in MLS Next Pro, I think that's absolutely a possibility. Campagnola turns 18 in 2025 from what I remember. I'll ask the next question, answer the next question, Mark, and this comes from DMC5280. Well, I hope we sign a new starting winger. I'm intrigued by KSB's potential. What does a good 2025 look like for him in terms of minutes and goal contributions? Will he actually get meaningful minutes off the bench? Hashtag AskHGHL. DMC5280, this is a really good question. Kamani Stewart-Baines came in with a lot of hype, certainly, albeit as a younger player who needed a little bit more development time. So closer to a Wayne Frederick or a Nate Jones than, say, an Andre Shinyashiki in that comparison. And then he had some injuries, and then he had some illnesses as well. I had a joke with him at one point when he came back from an illness that, you know, like he needed some more vitamin C because he kept getting sick or whatever. I didn't get a whole lot of details on that, folks. MLS is still in 2024 was doing the health and safety protocol. So if it was COVID, he would have been listed as health and safety protocol, not illness or any case. So somebody get KSB some vitamin C as far as I'm concerned on that front, maybe some Athletic Greens or something like that. And then that'll probably help him with that. But, you know, I think I'd like to see KSB become the regular first guy off the bench, especially if Jonathan Lewis doesn't return to the team. You know, they'll still probably sign another winger to pair with Kevin Cabral. But I don't know that Kevin Cabral, Omer Fernandez, Calvin Harris, and Kamani Stewart-Baines, none of them do exactly the same thing. And the Venn diagram overlap that they have between the four of them is for none of them really more than 50%. So I'd love to see KSB get 700 minutes all comps for the first team, and then how about 5 goal contributions, DMC? I think if he does that, that's clearly showing that he was healthy throughout the year. He was getting lots of minutes, and maybe that includes the Rapids first team returning to Open Cup. Maybe that's another run in Leagues Cup as well, or at the very least, it's a bunch of regular substitute minutes, where I felt like what was so frustrating and difficult for him in 2024 is that every single time he had a good little run, there was something else that came up. I would like to see KSB be healthy and available and not on the injury report for 90% of Colorado Rapids games in 2025. If that happens, he'll get more minutes, and if that happens, he'll probably get more goal contributions. And that being said, I think if he still spends most of the time down at R2 balling out similar to what Ollie LaRoz would have done in 2022, I don't think that's the end of the world for KSB in 2025. Next question that I will ask to you, Rabbi Mark Goodman. Rapids Bray, so B-Ray Mark asks, in the press conference after the loss to the Galaxy in the playoffs, Chris Armas mentioned about playing with 3 at the back and would be something to look into for next year. Do you think the club is seriously considering playing at a back 3 next year? And he asked this a day ago, Mark. I don't know if he asked this before or after the Cincinnati trade was official, but there was the 3-4-3 mark, and you had Reggie Cannon and Keegan Rosenberry dabbling going into the midfield. Mark, what did you make of that formation tactically as a plan B as opposed to the 4-2-3-1? And do we see 3 center backs at the back for the PIDs with the 2 FCC guys?
So the biggest challenge for the, I mean, we won't know, and we won't really have any idea until we have a fuller view of the roster, where we have more guys. I think the Rapids' recent history, for those of you who are newer to the podcast or newer to the Rapids, with the 3-5-2 or the 5-3-2, not good. Anthony Hudson ran it for a while, and he did it to shake things up when things were going really badly, and it worked for like one game, and then it was a catastrophe for 5. I don't remember Pablo Mastroeni ever using it. I think Connor Casey didn't use it either. Robin Fraser used it a little, and I don't remember it working very well for him either. There's just no history.
A little bit in 2021, Mark, when Austin Toste was balling out.
Yeah. I would say this. I think the way you asked the question, the way Rapids Bray asked the question, is if the 3 of our best players are center backs, would that mean that we should go 3 at the back? And the answer is, my take on the 5-3-2 is the 5-3-2 makes a lot of sense if you have 2 phenomenal two-way wingers. If you have guys who play offense and defense really, really well at the wings and can produce offense that way. Because otherwise, what you're doing is you're shifting more players into your own half, and you're making it harder in the attack. You know, because, I mean, the only argument I could see is if there are two really good center backs and you want to move Keegan Rosenberry to being a third center back, and you have a phenomenal option at right wing back to pair maybe against either Sebastian Anderson or Jones,
Reggie Cannon.
Sam Vines on the left, or you go with Reggie Cannon on the right. But I don't know that Sam Vines and Reggie Cannon as your bombing up the wings wing backs is a great option. I don't think either of them is quite the perfect fit for that. So I personally don't see a 5-3-2 being a solution to our problems next year. But I've been wrong. I don't mind trying to see. I would love to see something new. I don't think what's ailing the Colorado Rapids right now is formation. I think it's kind of talent and ability, and maybe, you know, shaking things up next year with a few fresh looks in offense.
Last HDHL mark that we'll get here that comes from Michael Bizarro. Who is your ideal winger for the Armis system, and who is a winger we should actually be targeting? I get the sense, Mark, that the Rapids at the other winger spot, which I would expect to be the right winger position, Kevin Cabral as the starter on the left is something I'm comfortable with. Kevin's a very direct, speedy striker who wants to, you know, who wants to run downhill. I think they want somebody who's a foil to that. So kind of similar, I would say, if I have a choice between, do I want a player who's an upgrade but the same equivalent to Calvin Harris, or do I want a better version of Moira Fernandez? I want a better version of Calvin Harris. I want a guy who's good on the ball, can be a little bit more dribbly. I want a guy who can deliver a really good cross from out wide. That's something that we've seen the fullbacks do a decent job of. That's not something we've seen the wingers do a good job of. Mark, I wrote an article early on in the season before Rafa went on his like 6-game goal scoring stretch, and I looked at the X goal chain and the expected assists, and Rafael Navajo's best chance creation came off of him when it was unassisted, and the next bet option was Keegan Rosenberry. So Keegan has a decent ball. Sam, when he gets forward, less so often, has had a good ball as well. I don't recall, Mark, any of these, like, I don't think of Calvin Harris cutting inside and delivering a perfect through ball to Hoffa for a knockdown header kind of a situation. I don't remember him doing that. Not quite the same as, you know, Marlon Hairston finding Dom Baji for a tap-in at the back post in transition. So I want a guy who's more of a distributor than a get directly at goal kind of a situation, and somebody who can be comfortable in possession, particularly out wide, where their job is to either create space or at the very least to not lose their matchup against the opposing fullback. I think that's something Calvin Harris is good at. I would like to see the Rapids get a TAM or a U22 or an international guy who is an upgrade at that position. To give you an answer of two guys who maybe we could look at, Mark, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of like Football Manager or FIFA or transfer market guys that I could look at. The Rapids have already gotten some guys in league. I still think Warwick Smith's best work for the most part happens within the league, so I'll give two in-league options. Mark, if you wanted to throw all the money at a problem, I would love to see Julian Gressel on the right wing in this club, in the 4-2-3-1 opposite of Kevin Cabral. It would take a lot of assets. It wouldn't give the Rapids as much flexibility at some of the other positions as well. I don't know that Julian Gressel is coming to the Rapids necessarily. He is available in the expansion draft, so maybe San Diego takes him. And I'm sure that there would be a bidding war if Inter Miami were to let word get out that he'd be available. And I'm sure there's a club in Europe or two that would offer a transfer fee for that as well. If I'm going for somebody a little bit more Rapids under the radar, you know, guy who needs an opportunity situation, Bernard Kamungo, the young African winger from FC Dallas, Mark, I would love to see the Rapids make another move where they take a guy off the scrap heap from FC Dallas and have him absolutely ball out and ball out against FC Dallas. So those are the two guys. And I think you could get Bernard Kamungo for $1 million in game, maybe a few other assets. So Mark, maybe 750K, one of the draft picks the Rapids just acquired, future considerations in an international roster spot. Dallas would probably want to sell on Claus as well. I'd be okay with that. And if it's another young guy who's battling with Kamani Stewart-Baines, that's kind of a – that plus one of the draft picks, Mark, for me, would be like a winger equivalent to what the Rapids had at center back last year. I did a pod – I think it was in January, Mark. I coined the phrase that the Rapids had a bunch of center back acorns. And so one of those just needed to grow up to be a really good tree. And that turned out to be Moise Bombito. And he was a tree that was worth $7 million and change. So, you know, I think the Rapids have some options at that third center back spot with or without Andreas Maxu, Nate Jones, Daniel Chacon, maybe Mike Edwards comes back, maybe a draft pick. I think similarly, they don't have bad options. I'd like to see the Rapids take a swing at that position. And then you got good cover if it's Kamani Stewart-Baines, the second year professional, Calvin Harris coming off of his second best year or his best year ever in MLS, and Omir Fernandez, who's in his second year working with the coach who gave him his first homegrown deal. I think the Rapids are going to be okay if they're healthy at the winger position. Just hopefully Kevin Cabral doesn't dislocate his elbow against LA Galaxy. Rabbi, shall we land this plane?
Let's do it.
Listeners, you can follow us individually on all the social media platforms at Rapids, at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and we are on Blue Sky, Threads, the platform formerly known as Twitter, and Facebook at Rapids96Podcast, at @HoldingTheHighline. Check us out there. We are posting more on Blue Sky. We are making the transition. If you would like to join us, if you would like to join Burgundy Sky, we would love to have the Burgundy Sky community grow on there. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you can get Mark's written work. That's where you can buy our merch. That's where you can support us financially. Mark, what's it going to be for supporting us in 2025 if you do the annual?
$48, I think, is where we're at, but I don't know what our merch is going to be. That's the real question. We got to figure that out.
Well, we talked about what our merch is going to be. We haven't announced our merch yet. You want merch in 2025? Give us $48 on our Substack. And you can check out my written work at burgundywave.com. Listeners, we will hopefully be back with a post-Super Draft podcast to recap that. So I'm hoping that we do that, Mark, hopefully the week of the 20th. And then I am hoping, listeners, to have a really, really good interview that I will record ahead of time that's going to be our annual Christmas Eve and including Hanukkah Eve podcast that we have as well. And I would anticipate then that you will not hear from us. It's those two pods, and that's probably it for calendar year 2024. So happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa to those who are celebrating Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah to all of our Jewish friends out there, whatever it is that you're celebrating at this time of the year, including but not limited to the MLS Super Draft. We're celebrating it here with you at HTHL. Listeners, we'll see you after the Super Draft when the Rapids get their next five Moise Bombitos on the roster.
Peace.